Welcome to Minute 37 of Season 12 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 film classic, The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Jess Rogers Pearson, a former podcaster who loves coming back to talk about movies by minute. Welcome back, Jess.
Thanks so much, Rob. I'm so glad to be here.
Yes, very good. So, Minute 37 begins with Hadley being very confused and ends with Trout yucking it up. So, we ended things yesterday basically on the edge.
Literally.
With Hadley getting ready to throw Andy off of the roof because Andy has insulted him and his wife, I guess you could say. I'm trying to think, with the insult that he gave, is it, or with the phrase, you know, is Hadley thinking to himself that he insulted Hadley or insulted Hadley's wife? I think it's a combination of both. What do you think?
I think it's, insulting his marriage, right?
Right.
That he's a wife-killing banker, so it's coming from a very dark place.
Right. That's true. And, you know, as he's about to drop Andy off the edge of the roof, so Hadley goes, "What'd you say?" And Andy goes, "$35,000." Hadley goes, "$35,000." Andy goes, "All of it. All of it. Every penny." And he pulls him away a little bit and goes, "You better start making sense." So then Andy says, "Well, if you want to keep all that money, give it to your wife. The IRS allows for a one-time only gift to your spouse for up to $60,000. He goes, "Bullshit. Tax-free?" And he goes, "Tax-free. The IRS can't touch 1 cent. And then Hadley looks at him and goes, "You're the smart banker that killed his wife. Why should I believe a smart banker like you so I can end up in here with you?" And he goes, "It's legal. Go ask the IRS." They'll say the same thing. "Actually, I feel stupid telling you this. I'm sure you would have investigated the matter yourself." And Hadley just looks at him and goes, "Yeah, f***ing A." Which we know he didn't. But so I just want to go back slightly because, you know, I've talked about this a lot, but Roger Deakins does an amazing, amazing job here with cinematography. And you can see it right at the very beginning of this, of this minute also, because the camera angle that he uses from above, and the camera is like moving downwards towards, you know, we see only the tops of their heads as they're having this conversation slash argument. But you also see a few of the convicts on the ground, looking up, trying to figure out what's going on. Like, I don't think Hadley will ever be able to say, "Well, you know, he just fell." People should know, right. You know, there are enough witnesses going around here that know what possibly happened here. But one of the things that I love about the way this shot is done, it's to make us feel the, I guess, agoraphobia of the whole thing. You know, how far it is that, you know, if Andy falls, because
if he falls, he's going to die.
No, but you can feel the depth. You feel that you're high up by the way that the camera shoots this. You know, this isn't like movie magic where, you know, there's a green screen behind him or anything like that, and you know they have a foam pad if he falls off or whatever it is. You know, the idea is that okay, you're looking down at the ground and you see that they're at least I think 2 or 3 floors up, if not more. You know, we don't know how high the plate window, the license plate factory is. You know, but you know it gives us a great view of the whole thing, like. This reminds me of Back to the Future 2. You know, the point where Marty is in the alternate 1985 and, you know, he's standing on the edge of the roof and Biff is about to try and shoot him and he just, like, falls off. But there they don't show us the ground. We just know from seeing the building beforehand how tall the building is. You know, and there they also fake us out by the whole fact that he, you know, gets picked up by the DeLorean. But whatever. That's a separate issue, but the idea is that the, you know, this camera shot says to us, okay, Andy is in a lot of danger right now for this whole thing. So I like that. I like the way that they show that. So he mentions the thing about the IRS one-time gift to your spouse. Okay, did you do any
Right.
research on that?
I did not.
Okay, do you
I
think
realizing
that
as you read through it now, I think it's true.
okay. First of all, it is completely inaccurate. So
How
I guess
inaccurate, though.
I oh well okay the idea is that the tax code in 1949 talks about the fact that first of all
Okay.
if you're getting an inheritance it isn't there's no income tax on it. Okay, there's an inheritance tax, but there's
Right.
no income tax. Nobody's talking about it as you know that you get taxed from it from income. And so in
Okay.
1949, just like it is today, anyone who gets an inheritance doesn't pay federal income tax on the inherited money.
Right.
If you were to have to pay it, it would be paid on the dead brother's estate before Hadley even received the money.
And only over a certain size estate.
Correct. Correct. So the idea of the gift that he talks about, that doesn't change any of the idea of the estate tax liability that his brother theoretically would have to pay, or his brother's estate pays. All right. So the $60,000 gift that Andy mentions, didn't exist back then. Basically what it was is that in 1948 Congress passed what was known as the Revenue Act, which introduced the marital deduction. And this allowed a person to gift up to half of their property to their spouse tax-free annually rather than a flat $60,000 lifetime cap.
Gotcha.
Okay. And the lifetime gift tax exemption for an individual in 1949 was 30,000. It wasn't 60,000. And you had another 3,000 additional every year that you can use as a per person exclusion. Right? So basically the fact that Hadley received $35,000, he could have given it to anybody, he didn't have to give it to his wife.
Right.
He doesn't need to try to use this loophole of being able to give it to your spouse and stuff like that. And the fact that he mentions he calls it the IRS, it wasn't known as the IRS
Oh, that I did
in
know.
at the time. It was still known as the Bureau of Internal Revenue, and they only changed the name to the IRS in 1953.
Okay. I didn't know the date had changed, but I knew it wasn't that old.
But again, as I was reading yesterday in the novel, and I'll continue shortly with a little more of that, but in when Stephen King originally wrote this story in 1976, there were changes that were made to the taxes at the time that introduced a standard $60,000 estate tax exemption. And
Ah.
basically, according to what I the research that I did, King actually just mixed up the older rules with the new rules and stuff while he was reading the story. Because the assumption is that nobody is going to really check. How many people are going to be thinking about this type of thing, especially unless you're looking at a movie minute by minute, where you want to try and find these various inconsistencies, I guess you could talk about
Sure.
that. But again, I mean the scene is still amazing. It doesn't matter. The content.
No, and it's kind of a shift for Andy, this the part of the scene we've seen already, this idea that he's giving him the facts, right? He's giving them in the information. He's sort of walking back his, do you trust your wife? And there's almost a split second where he realizes maybe he went too far with that phrase and becomes deferential. Oh, I know you would have investigated this yourself. Of course, you're a smart man, all that. I feel silly telling you this, stupid telling you this. You would have known, et cetera, even though he knows he's an idiot. Who
Well,
wouldn't have?
I think he's baiting him by saying that also, because
Fair.
for him to say, "Oh, I'm sure you would have checked this yourself. You're not an idiot." And Hadley's thinking to himself, he goes, "I didn't even think about these things."
Right. Well, Hadley's thinking that, but I think Andy's also from his literal precarious position, thinking maybe he needs to step this back to puff this guy up again and not make him seem like he thinks he's better.
That's true also. That definitely makes sense from that perspective. Hadley just looks at him and goes, yeah. Hey, I don't need no smart wife doing banker to tell me where the bear sh in the buckwheat. I
Right.
mean the dialogue that Hadley has, you know, whether it's stuff that comes from the book, whether it's stuff that comes from, I mean it's just great because it's so unique with everything that he says. You know, it's very crass, but it's still, you know, it's not phrases that you normally would think about.
No, they must be a phrase from Maine, right? Where bears in the buckwheat. I've never heard any version of that, but you got to go somewhere there are bears. So yeah, I suppose the Northeast, we have a lot of black bears. I don't know about buckwheat, but I know that winter wheat is something that definitely grows up
Right.
here.
Well, again, the idea is similar to the idea of there's a bear in the woods, you know, that type of thing. It's
Yeah.
you know, it's just I guess a variation, you know,
Sure.
on the idiom. It still works. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And
Yeah.
again, it's unique. And you know, it and you know, if you look at it, so it is something that oh, sorry, I made a mistake before in. He didn't write this in 76. He wrote this in 82, and but in 76 is when they changed the tax laws. That was the idea.
Oh,
That's
okay.
the thing,
Gotcha.
mix those up. Right. So and you know, as we'll get into it, it is written in the book also. So you know, it's a rustic regional idiom that is used very often in the rural Northeast. Upper Midwest and Appalachia. And obviously it is something that is said in Maine. So yeah, you're right. It is a Maine idiom,
Yeah.
you know, so, but it's just interesting just to switch, you know, from the woods. I'm assuming that in all these places, you know, Appalachia and in Maine, they do have woods. So like, why do you need to
Yes.
change it?
Extensive. Yeah, I think Maine is 80, 85, 90%
Exactly.
woods.
And how much buckwheat is it?
Not as much.
But again, he wants to be unique, which is fine. And Andy basically has a very quick retort, and he goes, "Of course not, but you do need someone to set up the tax-free gift for you, and that'll cost you, and that'll cost you a lawyer, for example." And Hadley looks at him as a bunch of ball-washing bastards. And he goes, well, I suppose I could set it up for you. That would save you some money. If you get the forms, I'll prepare them for you. Nearly free of charge. I'd only ask for 3 beers apiece for each of my coworkers. And Trout just starts cracking up. He goes, coworkers, get him. That's rich. Which I gotta say it's very funny that Paul McCrane is the actor who gets to say that line because it fits him so well to be saying that phrase.
Oh, yeah,
You know, anyone who's
absolutely.
seen him in ER, anyone who's seen him from the Earth to the Moon, you know, that's the type of character he plays. And it's just great.
Yeah. Someone who can mock somebody else who's sucking up to the better
Exactly.
friend or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's great. So I wanted to read a little more from the novel itself about this phrase.
Please.
So then it continues from what we were talking about yesterday, and he goes, Andy said, maybe I put it wrong. Whether you trust her or not is immaterial. The problem is whether or not you believe she would ever go behind your back, try to hamstring you. Hadley got up. Mert got up. Tim Youngblood got up. Hadley's face was as red as the side of a fire barn. Your only problem, he said, is going to be how many bones you still get unbroken. You can count them in the infirmary. Come on. Come on, Mert. We're throwing this sucker over the side. Tim Youngblood drew his gun. The rest of us. The kept turning like mad. The sun beat down. They were going to do it. Hadley and Mert were simply going to pitch him over the side. Terrible accident. Dufresne prisoner 81433 SHNK was taking a couple of empties down and slipped on the ladder. Too bad. They laid hold of him. Mert in the right arm. Hadley on the left. Andy didn't resist. His eyes never left Hadley's red, horsey face. If you've got a thumb on her, Mr. Hadley, he said in a small, calm, composed voice, there's not a reason why you shouldn't have every cent of that money. Final score, Mr. Byron Hadley, 35,000. Uncle Sam, zip. Mert started to drag him towards the edge. Hadley just stood still. For a moment, Andy was like a rope between them in a tug-of-war game. Then Hadley said, hold on one second, Mert. What do you mean, boy? I mean, if you've got your thumb on your wife, you can give it to her, Andy said. You better start making sense, boy, or you're going over. The government allows you a one-time-only gift to your spouse, Andy said. It's good up to $60,000. Hadley was now looking at Andy as if he had been poleaxed. Nah, that ain't right, he said. Tax-free? Tax-free, Andy said. IRS can't touch one cent. How would you know a thing like that? Tim Youngblood said, he used to be a banker, Byron. I suppose he might. Shut your head, Trout. Which is, okay, maybe in the book, Trout is Youngblood, as opposed to it being another guard. Just shut your head, Trout. Hadley said without looking at him, Tim Youngblood flushed and shut up. Some of the guards called him Trout because of his thick lips and buggy eyes. Hadley kept looking at Andy. He had a smart banker who shot his wife. Why should I believe a smart banker like you? So I can wind up in here breaking rocks right alongside you? You'd like that. You'd like that, wouldn't you? Andy said quietly. If you went to jail for tax evasion, you'd go to a federal penitentiary, not Shawshank. But you won't. The tax-free gift to the spouse is a perfectly legal loophole. I've done dozens, no hundreds of them. It's meant primarily for people with small businesses to pass on, or for people who come into the one-time-only windfalls, like yourself. I think you're lying, Hadley said. But he didn't. You could see he didn't. There was an emotion dawning on his face, something that was grotesque, overlying that long, ugly countenance and that receding sunburned brow, as an almost obscene emotion, which, seen on the features of Byron Hadley, it was hope. No, I'm not lying. There's no reason why you shouldn't take my word. There's no reason why you should take my word for it either. Engage a lawyer. Ambush chasing highway robbing cocksuckers, Hadley cried. Andy shrugged. Then go to the IRS. They'll tell you the same thing for free. Actually, you don't need me to tell you that. You would have investigated the matter for yourself. I don't need any smart wife-killing banker to show me where the bear and the buckwheat. You'll need a tax lawyer or a banker to set up the gift for you. That will cost you something, Andy said. Or, if you're interested, I'd be glad to set it up for you nearly free of charge. The price would be 3 beers apiece for my co-workers. Co-workers, Mert said, and let out a rusty guffaw. He slapped his knee. A real knee slapper was old Mert, and I hope he died of intestinal cancer in the part of the world where morphine is, as of yet, undiscovered. Co-workers, ain't that cute? Co-workers, you ain't got any.
Wow.
Again.
That's a great line from Red. I hope he dies where he can't get morphine.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a little more humor in that whole sequence, even in the dialogue.
Exactly.
Than in the movie. They built a really strong tension in the movie following off that. Are they going to push him off the roof? How do you bring it back down? And the book really just keeps ramping it up, but with humor almost.
And the funny thing is in the movie, Mert looks away. He doesn't want to be a part of it, but
he's not helping drag him to the roof, side of the roof. Yeah.
And one of the cool things also is you see this in the movie, at a certain point during their conversation or the discussion between Hadley and Andy, you see the guards and all the cons, everyone has stopped in their tracks. No one's doing anything. They're just watching this conversation go on. Yeah. And nobody cares either. It's not like the guards are saying, hey, wait a second, why aren't they doing their work or anything like that? You know?
Yeah. So,
yeah, I like the way that that is how this minute ends. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Just the idea, the last piece where I'd only asked 3 beers apiece for each of my coworkers. I love where every time I've seen this, I catch on the fact that why 3? Why not 2? Why not 5? I always get stuck on why did he ask for 3 beers? It's just a funny number. And I don't know why it hits me. And I stumble on it every time that it's a funny number of beers.
Yeah, I think it's a funny number of beers also. I do agree. And we'll see later, spoiler alert, that nobody is counting.
True, we don't, it's not that important. It could be just some beers apiece.
Right.
But he's specific.
Yes, he's very specific. Yeah. I want 3 beers. Yeah. That's it. You know.
Yep. Not asking for too much.
Yeah, exactly. So again, I mean, maybe it has to do with the fact that beyond 3 beers, there's more of a chance that someone will be drunk, and if you have a drunk prisoner, it could be a problem. I mean, It's very possible that Andy has really thought this through.
Yeah,
It wasn't
for
just a
sure.
random number. He probably just said, okay, three beers sounds fair enough that nobody's going to get overly drunk,
Right.
and it'll and also it won't cost Hadley an arm and a leg for the whole thing.
Yeah, there's some calculation that we're not seeing with Andy making it for those three. I just love the specificity of it.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right, so today's segment is called Talking Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five movies featuring narrators. So why don't you once again start with your number five and work your way up?
So I should have spent more time actually looking up who the narrator was in each of these movies, because at the moment I can't remember some of them off the top of my head. But my number five is Clueless. Alicia Silverstone does a really good job narrating what's going on, explaining things to you, why she's going through this. And it is drawn from Emma, obviously, where she's coming from. So Clueless number five. I thank you for the list of options. I looked through as much research as I could
It
find.
was a
And
suggestion.
what
That was
the
it.
suggestions. No, but I appreciated the jumping off so I knew what I was thinking about. Honestly, one of the ones that hit me in that I could hear the narration voice immediately reading that it was on the list is the animated Charlotte's Web. And that voice was absolutely part of telling that whole story, that you knew it was this grandpa-like character telling the story about what was going on.
Right, but
So that's
it's one of the it's one of the, I'm trying to remember which character it is. Obviously it's not Charlotte and it's not Wilbur.
not Charlotte, it's not Wilbur, it's not Fern. It's one of the grandpa father characters.
Interesting. Maybe
No,
it's one of
it
the
may be one of the
ghosts.
animals.
I'm assuming it's one of the animals.
Yeah.
That I'm pretty sure of.
I don't remember, and I that's what I mean. I should have looked this up because now I'm having trouble with it. Find it.
It tells me the name of the person who does it. I don't care about that. They tell me in each version who is the actor who narrates. I don't care. I want another character.
Right. Maybe the dog? Yeah, I
Wait,
haven't seen Charlotte's Web
is
recently.
it's not Templeton
Not
the rat, is it?
unless he's talking about it in third person when he talks about the rat.
Right.
I don't know. I'd have to go back again. Either way, that narrator is really powerful. I can hear the tone of voice. As soon as I saw the name, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's such a good narrator.
Okay, well, according to what I found right now, it's a third person omniscient narrator. The storyteller is an outside unnamed voice.
Gotcha. Clearly, he can see inside all of their other what's going on, this omniscient grandfathery voice, but it's like an older man's voice doing that narration. I think he's really good. Tombstone is my number three. Just over the top, awesome. Needs to bring all those pieces together. Any sort of historical movie, you need to have almost required to have some sort of narration to keep people moving all the pieces together. Number two is 500 Days of Summer, which is a movie I've watched way too many times and go back and forth between liking and disliking because the way it doesn't and does work out, it's really hard to hold on to. Like, why does this relationship never work? Is he always at fault? Is she being a pain in the ass? And so it's a complex movie that I enjoy. And the way it's narrated, it's so unreliable. And then number one has to be Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Just, it's narration, but it's also looking straight at camera kind of narration. So it's telling you all of the things that are going on and breaking the fourth wall kind of narration.
I mean, what's interesting
So it's
in
an
Ferris
acting.
Bueller, I mean, again, it's a great choice, but it's not a he's not narrating the entire time.
No, for
He's
sure.
narrating a certain intervals, like mostly at the beginning,
Mostly at the beginning, he's
when he's
getting most of
introducing
it
the other
set up.
characters and introducing himself and things like that.
Yeah. And then the rest of the time it's done with straight to camera
That's right.
asides
That's
more
right.
than
Just
narration.
breaking the fourth wall type of thing.
Yeah. It was hard because when you start looking for movies with narration as the broad over category, you start going, well, what is narration? Does that mean it's a
Right.
non-character narrating the whole movie, or is it a character telling that story? Are they omniscient? Are they only from their own point of view? There were a lot of levels to
Yeah.
start looking for. So
Oh,
thank
you're
you for the
welcome. You're welcome.
task.
Thank you for taking up on the taking up that task. Right. So now let us go to the daily game, and we will start with high low, where you have to guess
Okay.
the IMDb and Rotten Tomato rating of a random movie that was nominated for Best Picture at some point over the last 76 years. Or 75 years, 75 years. So
Cool.
let's spin the wheel and see what you get.
See if I can improve a little on yesterday.
Right, the 2024 movie, A Complete Unknown.
A complete unknown. Ooh. I would give IMDb, it's pretty new. A 7.6 and a Rotten Tomatoes 83. How far off am I?
You wow, very close on both of those. So it's 7.2 and 82.
Okay. And this is the
So yeah,
that's the Bob
that's great.
Dylan movie? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I enjoyed that. I only seen it once. I should rewatch it at some point. But yeah, I liked it. It was much better than I was expecting it.
Fair. That's what I'd
And
heard as
I
well.
liked it more. All right, let's spin the wheel for your next one. The 1961 film Fanny.
Wow. Okay. I assume it's about Fanny Bryce, but I haven't actually even heard of this movie.
It's not about Fanny Bryce.
It's what?
Not
It's not about Fanny
about
Bryce.
Fanny
What's it
Bryce.
about?
Yeah, no.
And do they
It's
remake
about
it in
the.
England, so it's not a
It's
different.
about it. No. It's about like a young woman who is looking to get to find someone to marry.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
Then this is going to be just a straight guess because I
It's
haven't
with
even heard of this movie.
Leslie Caron and Maurice Chevalier,
Ali, yeah.
who were both in
Gigi.
Gigi just
Yeah, I love
three
that
years earlier. Right
movie.
there, here, I'll quickly read the IMDb thing. Young Marius dreams of leaving his dull provincial life and seeing the world. When the beautiful Fanny declares her adoration for him, Marius must choose between an adventurous life at sea and the grandest adventure of all, love.
Okay, now I want to find this movie. How cool. I would give IMDb a 7.0 and a I am Rotten Tomatoes 88.
All right, well,
Am I way too
you're going to be a little disappointed with this one because it's a 6.6 and a 60%.
60%. Okay.
Yeah,
With a 7.0, I wasn't that far off,
I
but
was
yeah, the other
yeah.
one I was way off.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that movie. I didn't like it. I found it really boring. I didn't want to say that
Fair.
when you were still guessing. But then again, I'm also someone who does not like Gigi.
Oh, fair. I really
I
like
don't understand it.
80% of Gigi, and then 20% of it is just god awful. It's so boring.
Exactly.
The rest of it, so much of it is creepy that she's a young woman. The
Exactly.
creepy factor is making it way worse as we get older.
Right, and the songs don't help. The songs make it even creepier.
Not a lot. No. Some do, most don't. His song, when Maurice Chevalier sings about
Little
little
girls,
girls, it's just
exactly.
creepy
That
now.
that's the point. Yes.
It, yeah,
I'm
it's
always
rough.
shocked that movie won, I think, like 9 Oscars. I'm like, oh my God.
Right.
And I'm not
Yeah.
even looking at it from, the eyes just of today. I'm just saying in general, why would back in 1958 everyone just go head over heels over that movie? I'm trying to think of what sparks people's interest in that type of thing. I don't know. It's very weird. Maybe they didn't have any better choices that year. I
I
don't
don't know.
know. Actually, that's
Obsession
not
with
true.
French
Right. That
culture.
year, actually, I liked the other four Oscar nominees even better. You had Auntie Mame, Cat in the Hot Tin Roof, Separate Tables, and The Defiant Ones. So, okay, yeah. I
Yeah, all of them are better
Oh
than Gigi.
well. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the episodes of Real Insight was about what the theme of our show was, Oscar winners and the highest grossing film of a year. We watched both of those and would discuss, and the Gigi week,
Yes.
it was rough. Rachel definitely disliked
Okay.
Gigi.
I understand that. I think I saw it once, like 13 years ago or something like that, and I just won't watch it again. Even though it's a Best Picture
No,
winner,
there's no
that type of
reason.
thing. It's like, yeah. It's one of my least favorite Best Picture winners. There are a few others that I really didn't like, but that's very, very high on the list of my least liked ones. All right, let's spin the wheel for your final one today. Okay, the 1968 film The Lion in Winter.
Ooh. It's Katharine Hepburn and who's the male lead? It's a big guy. It's a big name.
Isn't it Richard Burton? Is it?
Richard Burton or my brain's going to Peter Fonda.
Peter O'Toole?
Peter O'Toole maybe.
No, Peter O'Toole maybe?
It's one of those. Anyway,
Peter, sorry, you're right, it's Peter O'Toole. Peter O'Toole and Katharine Hepburn.
okay. I'd give it an IMDb of 8.1 and a Rotten Tomatoes of, personally, I find it a boring movie, 80%.
Okay.
How'd I do?
It's 7.9,
Okay.
so very close, very close. But it has a 91%.
Oh, yeah. I can't be trusted with my own opinion all the time.
No, but again, it also goes back to what people thought in 1968,
For
you know.
sure. And when you're watching it, right? It's a very specific kind of movie.
Yes.
So it's not meant for everyone at all times. It's
That
not
is
like a
true.
Saturday morning, put it on the screen and focus movie.
Usually not.
It benefits from the dark of a big screen. And
yeah.
focus.
Yeah. I think it's a movie that has a lot more potential because it's a very good story, but it has too many lulls in the way that it tells the story. That's part of the problem. It doesn't flow as well as one might hope it would. All right, and now we will play the second game today of Name That Novel Adaptation. So let's spin the wheel and see what you got today. Okay, this is a movie that came out in 1956, and the original title is The True Story of Christopher Emmanuel Balestrero.
1956? I don't know. Something like Billy the Kid, but I think I'm wrong completely. I don't know.
Okay, I will give you some hints.
I'd
So
love some hints.
the first hint is, do you want to know who directed it or who starred in it?
Started it.
Okay, Henry Fonda,
Who directed it?
Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, wow. Okay. That should really get me everywhere there, but. It's probably not going to. No, it's none of the Hitchcock movies I can think of, so I give up.
Okay,
Sorry.
it's the Wrong Man.
Oh, no.
Have you ever seen it?
I've never seen it.
Okay, so it's about a guy who is arrested and falsely accused of something. It fits in with the Shawshank
Yeah, it
theme.
really would. And it's that same, I mean, some of Hitchcock's movies are scary and gross, Psycho. And then some of them are just thrilling, scary, like Rear Window and It sounds like the wrong man.
Yeah, and like he's trying to figure out how to, how to stay away from the police when they're trying to catch him, and his wife tries to save him and prove that he's innocent and that he didn't do the crime that they claim he did. And
Gotcha.
it's it that that's what I recommend. I recommend that higher than Fanny.
Okay, good to know.
Much higher than Fanny. All right, so Jess, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Most often you can find me on Threads at Eco River.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moveaboutminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moveaboutminute@moveaboutminute.net. So, until tomorrow, busy living.
Or get busy dying.